Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Jenny Smedley. She's apparently a prolific writer. She's an author of 6 books, with possibly 7 and an 8th to come, all in and around the subject of reincarnation. Welcome to the show, Jenny. How do you find the time to write so many books?
Thank you, Mike. It is a little bit odd, to tell you the truth. I mean, when I start writing a book, I kind of get taken over, you know, and it is pretty silly. I mean, I can write a book in 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
It's very strange. It's the same with the songwriting that I suddenly started doing, sort of 200 songs in about 2 months. It's obviously not me doing it. It's obviously not me. It's all coming from somewhere else.
Right. So are you aware that it is inspired in the sense that you've had some contact with spirit in some way?
I'm sure it is. I'm absolutely positive it is. My own past life regressions have been very unusual in that entire conversations obviously, everybody's got these in their subconscious, but for some reason, mind able to come out. And normally with regressions, it's fairly sketchy, but the details of mine have been, you know, right down to the last thing. And sometimes I've written something while I'm not even looking at it. I might be yeah. watching the television, you know, and writing yeah. with the other hand, and nobody's more amazed than me when I see what I've written.
Right. Now, most people, I guess, who have regression do it for some specific reason. Mm. Did something happen or did you have an experience that made you interested in your past lives?
I think it's one of the things that have always intrigued me. Although I was brought up as a Catholic, I left the church when I was about 19 for one reason and another, and was looking for something spiritual to grab hold of, you know.
Yes.
And nothing came to mind, and although I was very happily married, I did sink into a bit of a depression, gained weight, the usual sort of thing, couldn't find my way out of it. It's a very common story now, which is why I spend most of my time now helping other people to do the same that I've done.
Yeah.
And basically, I used to have nightmares, events that hadn't happened to me in this life but seemed incredibly real, and they were recurrent nightmares, and I used to talk about people that I didn't know, you know, during the nightmares and after the nightmares. It was all very strange, and eventually one day it culminated in one of those split seconds that really does change your life, when I was sitting at home on my own feeling pretty depressed, and something told me to switch the television on at that particular moment.
Yeah.
And I did, and a chap appeared on the screen who was called Garth Brooks, an American singer, who I'd never heard of before, I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly everything changed. The depression went away. I knew he had something to do with these nightmares I was having. And eventually I went for regression, really, to try and find out some answers as to what was going on.
And did you?
I did indeed, I did. I discovered that I'd lived in the 17th century and that I'd actually met Garth Brooks in one of his past lives.
Well.
And it all ended very tragically. Cut the long story very short, it all ended very tragically. I mean, you know, you think if this is your imagination, you expect to come up with a happy story, you know, something that will make you feel better. But in fact, this is quite the reverse. It was very, very tragic. But I went with it and followed up everything I'd described, found houses that I'd described as I described them, and churches and all kinds of things.
Oh.
We travelled all over the country finding these places.
Right.
And then, of course, there was... Yeah, it was an amazing experience, you know, seeing things that you'd only seen in your dreams or in
right.
trance. And there they were, exactly as you'd seen them.
Right. Did you actually, were you given your name for that period of time? And were you able to trace any record of it in registries or in cemeteries or whatever?
Well, this is where it got even weirder, to tell you the truth. I always knew that my name was Madeline. And I knew that because in the nightmares I'd been called Madeline. That was one of the weird things about the nightmares. So I knew my name was Madeline. And as time went by, I started to rediscover other people from that lifetime.
Right.
One of whom was a very dear friend of mine who tragically died this year, but she was Madeline's friend. She was actually the cook in the house. She was called Nancy.
Yeah.
And when I met her, she was the editor of a country music magazine. And because the story involved a country music singer, she was interested in it. But she was very, very sceptical.
Hmm.
Until, that is, she started having her own memories of the same lifetime.
Well,
of course, eventually we discovered that she was actually there. And so she actually came up with the surname. She said that my name was Deport and that we were a French Catholic family. But there was some confusion because the name Deport was changed to St. John at one point.
Mm.
And we're not quite sure at what point that was. We've been able to find out that the Deports were, in fact, a very influential family in that area and that they lived there for many generations. But in records at that time are pretty few and far between because the civil war between England and Scotland happened very shortly afterwards.
Yeah.
And, of course, such a lot of things were destroyed at that time.
Mm.
Such a lot of records were destroyed.
Yeah. Well, what's so, this particular experience and your investigation trying to tie it all together actually put into one of your books, or was it made into one book by itself?
Yes, it was eventually. I mean, at the time I kept a journal of what was going on, and eventually, yes, I did one of my books called Souls Don't Lie. This is the complete journal of the story. Of course, one of the important things I had to do, sorry.
Yeah, carry on, yeah.
So one of the important things I had to do before the book could be published was I had to bring it to Garth Brooks' attention, because the last thing I wanted to do was to upset him or embarrass him in any way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had no idea. I mean, I'd found out he was this country music singer, but country music's not big over here, I have to say. It's pretty much looked down upon.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had no idea that a country music singer would be as big as he is. And obviously I thought that you could just speak to him, you know. But
yeah,
of course you can't.
No.
No, so I spent about 4 years talking to his management offices and had a meeting with his manager. And they were all very nice, and they obviously wanted to meet me partly out of curiosity, I think, to see if I was some kind of nutcase. And they satisfied themselves, luckily for me, that I wasn't a nutcase, and they agreed that I was very sincere in my beliefs, but they weren't prepared to help me meet him. But then something even stranger happened. It really is a very strange story. We were over in Nashville, and Garth at the time was in Los Angeles for an awards. He also had offices over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they told us that he wouldn't be back anyway until after we'd left the country. So it looked like we'd gone all the way across to America. And by the way, I've always been frightened of flying. And we'd gone all the way across there for nothing. So anyway, we were sitting in the motel, which was just a couple of miles from Nashville Airport. And I suddenly just knew he was there.
Yeah.
I had this very strong sensation that he was nearby. Well, my husband and our friend Graham, who was with us, took my word at it immediately. And off we went with a map and a crystal, and I doused, and took us to his house, which is about 8 miles out of the city, totally out in the middle of nowhere. Of course, he lives in Oklahoma now, but at the time he was living there still.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he was there. and he was absolutely brilliant. He wasn't in the slightest bit fazed by it.
Oh, great.
He didn't... yeah, I know. You know, people have said to me, weren't you afraid, you know, he was going to call for security? I said, well, I wasn't, funnily enough, because although he's obviously different, you know, when people are reincarnated, they're not the same as they were.
No.
I was still certain there would be enough of him there that, you know, he would resonate with it. And sure enough, he did.
Yeah.
And he had no objections whatsoever to the book being published. And so it went ahead.
That was fine, yeah. When did that one come out? Many years ago?
Well, there's been a couple of versions of it because the first time I wrote it down, I hadn't met him, of course. And so then I had to rewrite it after I had met him to include that bit in. So that was the second version. And then a couple of years ago, my new publisher asked me to rewrite the story in less of a journal type of way and more of telling the story.
Yeah.
So that the current version came out a couple of years ago.
Hmm. Well, it sounds a very interesting book, I must say. Have you had any other past lives revealed that have come over so well with detail and information like that?
I've had a couple. I've had about six, I think, in all that I've gone through. Most of them haven't been in that detail. They've been, you know, I think you get to know the ones you need to know more, but you form a whole picture. But I had some problems with a member of my family that have gone back a long time, and that was very interesting because I discovered three lifetimes I'd had with her, and it really did explain an awful lot.
Yes.
But they were quite sketchy and just concentrated on the main events of the time.
Yeah.
I had another one in the 6th century that was with my husband Tony in this lifetime. That had quite a lot of detail in it. And it's very interesting, you know, to re-experience living in these different times.
Yes.
Because you know... In this lifetime here, all of us, we just don't know that we're born, do we, really, when you look back at how people had to live and what they had to put up with.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, people, someone asked me the rather unromantic question about the 17th century lifetime and said, were they clean? And I said, well, they were clean for the time.
Yeah.
We wouldn't think they were clean. I would probably think they were fairly disgusting, but, you know, it doesn't matter because at the time they were as clean as they could be, you know.
Yeah.
And it's also very extraordinary as a woman too. I've had two lifetimes where I was a man.
Mm.
And that's very weird. How you guys walk, I don't know.
Nothing like that
now. It's very odd. Very, very strange. But it certainly gives you an insight, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that the lives you are given, and it sounds as though you would agree with this in light of what you say, but when people perhaps go to clairvoyance or whatever they do and they're given past lives, do you think it's for that reason that somehow it ties in with their present life, like there's still a link for some reason there, and they give it to you, perhaps in the hopes that you identify with something. Is that how you find it when you've got into it?
Oh, I really do, Mike. Yes, definitely. My first book with those books was called Past Life Angels. And I really do believe that there are these specific angelic entities who aren't like guardian angels that are here in this life to try and keep us out of trouble. But they actually were with us when our soul was first created, and they've been with us every lifetime and talked to us in between lifetimes to help us decide which lifetime we need to experience next.
Yeah.
And then once we get into that lifetime, one of their jobs is to give us kind of nudges to try and get us to remember, because that's the challenge, obviously. We come here... and we're supposed to reunite our souls with our mind and body, and recall the whole of ourselves. That, and if we can achieve that while enduring the human condition, then I think that they would say we have succeeded. And so, yes, I think definitely. I mean, you can go through lifetimes and you can see a pattern. My latest book, How to Be Happy, there are loads of case histories in there of regressions that people have undergone who have got problems in this lifetime. And one of them, under the heading, the chapter about destructive relationships, was a couple who were constantly tearing strips off each other. She blamed him, he blamed her. They loved each other. It was a passionate relationship, but it was just so dysfunctional, and everybody said, oh, they ought to split up, but they didn't want to split up. And they actually went through a series of past lives, and it turned out that they'd been kind of swapping roles, master and mistress, mistress and slave, slave and master, through lifetime after lifetime, and each time they were meant to put things right. But each time the one that had been the slave or the servant in the previous life would be the master, and they would end up taking it out on the other person.
Oh, how awful, yeah.
Until in this lifetime, in this lifetime we don't have slaves, thank God, and people are getting more equal. But they were still carrying it on, you know.
Yeah.
And once they realised that, they realised that they both needed to grow up and stop carrying on that way, stop the cycle repeating.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. And other people, I mean, myself, with my family member, you know, it was most interesting to see, stand back and see the lifetimes as they went on. And you can just see how the story unfolded. So, yes, I totally agree with you that all our lifetimes are connected.
Yeah. It's just getting back to the couple there that couldn't seem to release their offensive ways for each worker.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
Now, you also are into past life therapy. How would you approach a problem like that? I mean, what could you tell them that would help them to overcome it?
Well, basically, I think it was pretty self-explanatory to them. People tend to come to me when they got to the point where they just don't know what else to do. It's kind of last resort, you know. They're fed up with the problem. Whatever the problem is, it could be a phobia, it could be all manner of things. So these were the same. They wanted answers. And when two people are regressed and they come up with the same story, it's proof positive that it's genuine. And really, I didn't need to say too much to them except to explain, could they see what they'd been doing, that they'd been doing these dominant roles in reversal each time. And, you know, they could see it for themselves. And it really did stop them in their tracks. And they kind of, you know, well, who started it? Well, it doesn't really matter who started it. You know, who's going to finish it is the important thing.
Yeah.
They seem to be doing okay. Another really strange one. Sorry?
No, carry on, no.
Oh, okay. You don't have to stop me.
I wasn't going
to
say anything special.
I do tend to go on a bit.
Oh, that's great.
Another,
what we want to hear. Yeah.
Oh, good. Something else that's very interesting is that a lot of people will say that homosexuals are born to be that way. You know, that's just natural to them. But now and again, you get somebody who has been heterosexual all their lives, and then they suddenly fall in love with someone of the same sex.
Yeah.
And it totally baffles them, and it baffles their family, and their families can get very upset and don't believe it's genuine, and all kinds of problems occur. And that's something I've found, that when two people come back together and they're soulmates, and they've been soulmates in a past life, and they've promised to be together in this life no matter what, it doesn't matter. Age doesn't matter. Sex doesn't matter. Colour doesn't matter. Nothing matters, that they have to be together.
Yeah.
And so that's very interesting, because people don't, you know, they can't grasp why they've suddenly appeared to have changed.
Hmm.
But love just transcends everything, doesn't it? It doesn't matter.
I can understand that. Yes, I can. But you'll probably agree, as you're well into what is behind the process of reincarnation, that people come into life with a purpose.
Yes.
You touched upon it in the sense that this couple that were dominating one another kept coming in to try and overcome it. But mm-hmm. do you believe that everybody has a purpose?
Oh, yes. Absolutely,
how do they
I
find
do.
Out what it is?
Well, if I could answer that for everybody, I'd be a millionaire, I think. It's what everybody wants to know, isn't it?
Exactly.
We all want to know it. I mean, really, I was very lucky because I was shown it, you know, in terms that were unmistakable. I actually had an angelic visitation where I was actually shown what I was meant to be doing. But the problem is it can be very subtle. Somebody may have come into this life and their sole purpose may be to create a beautiful garden, or their sole purpose may be to be a wonderful mother to children that perhaps they abused in the past. Or they could be meant to win the Nobel Peace Prize. But the problem is, as you say, is finding it out. It seems to me that the more we can understand about our spiritual selves, the more likely we are to understand what our purpose is.
And
past life regression is a very good way of working towards that. It's a very good way of putting yourself in touch with your own soul.
I guess very few people actually follow that particular path, but would it be correct to say, if for no other reason or no other opportunity perhaps to delve into it, perhaps to follow your intuition? If you get feelings about certain things or about yourself, is that about the best advice you could give?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, there are many, many ways, aren't there? There are many mansions in my Father's house, as Jesus said. There is many, many ways. Some people find it through a church.
Yeah.
They're open to their spirituality that way, and they come to understand what they're here for. Some people go to a clairvoyant, and the clairvoyant actually is able to tell them something. You should be doing this or that. I mean, I've had that happen myself, where I've advised people to try a certain path, and the next minute they're off. You know, they're running. They're doing it. Sometimes you can find out yourself by something like past life regression or by meditation.
Yeah.
There are many, many ways. And as you say, intuition. The problem is, don't you find people so stubborn when it comes to intuition? They get a feeling. Yeah, they get a feeling. Don't go in there, but they still do it. You know, or don't go that way, go this way. But they can get very stubborn.
Yes.
And fight against it.
I think the ego often wins the battle. The ego says, go ahead and do it. And the little inner voice that knows better will say, no, don't. But because the ego's urging them on, they ignore the little voice, don't they?
It's like nobody's going to tell me what to do, even if it's me.
I personally think following your intuition is very useful. I don't think it would let you down very often. But of course, I was only going to say, what they could do to solve their problem is buy your book, Souls Don't Lie.
Well, because that told me my path. Some people have read it, and it has indeed told them theirs. It's quite extraordinary. There was a lady who lives in Seattle in America who was virtually on the edge of her family thinking about having her committed. They really thought, she'd gone totally bonkers. One of the things she was doing was her daughter was a huge Garth Brooks fan, and she had big posters of him. And when the daughter was out, the mum would find herself in there drawing over the the picture, changing him, adding longer hair and making his face a bit thinner and his eyes a bit bluer and saying that's how he's meant to look.
Yeah.
And, you know, naturally the daughter was a bit upset about this. I'd come home and find her posters all drawn on. And also she would say that she would recount things to them that she said had happened to her that they knew had never happened to her. She claimed to have died young. She claimed to have had a son when she only had daughters and very, very strange things. And then she read my book. And she was very excited and she rushed back to her family and was showing them chapters and pages in the book and saying, look, I told you about that. That's exactly what I told you happened. And anyway, she eventually came to realise that Ryan in Souls Don't Lie, who is today Garth Brooks, she was actually his mother in Ireland.
Oh, well.
Now, bear in mind, you know, I live in England. She lives over there in Seattle, and she had to try and get in touch with me. Luckily, I'm easier to talk to than Garth Brooks, I have to say. And so she got in touch with me. Well, you know, I'm hardly in a position to not believe somebody.
No.
So I believed her. So then we decided, though, that we would just do, by way of an experiment, a controlled test. And I described to a third party a birthmark that Ryan had had on his back. And I explained, I described the size and the shape and the texture and the colour. And then I said to this lady, you know, do you remember your son having a birthmark on his back? And she described the exact same thing to me, the exact same birthmark of where it was, what the shape of it, the colour of it, everything. Except the really weird thing was she was describing it by looking at herself in a mirror, because she had the same one.
Yeah.
Well, so that kind of clinched it, really.
Yeah, yeah.
She also, she's a bit of an artist, and she also managed to draw a portrait of Madeline that was very accurate. Yeah.
Amazing. I've read that if, for example, someone in an earlier life, let's say for argument's sake, was shot in the shoulder, and they come back into another lifetime, often they bear a mark where, say, the bullet entered their body, which I suppose people would call a birthmark. Now, in the different people that you've seen, have you found that crops up very often? Do you agree
with it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do agree with it, very much so. Also, scars, people will sort of recreate a scar sometimes as well. For instance, in Garth Brooks' case, Ryan was actually run through with a sword. That was how he was killed. That was the big tragedy.
Yeah.
In the abdomen on the left-hand side. And when Garth was the same age as Ryan was, about 19, he was in a car accident. And in his own words, a piece of metal from the car broke off and skewered him.
Well,
and he has a scar that, it looks just like a sword wound.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, yeah. And the other day I came across a lady who, she had some, as she said actually, they looked a bit like bite marks on her neck and shoulders.
Yeah.
And she couldn't go near dogs. Any dog she went near would attack her.
Oh.
And it turned out that she'd been going out, it was back in the 18th century in America, she'd been going out to move some cattle or get some cattle in or something, and she'd been attacked by a wolf. And the wolf had jumped up and bitten her, and then her brother had come running out and shot the wolf.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turned out that she still had this wolf spirit attached to her. I guess it was, never going to let go. And this explained why she couldn't go near dogs, because the dogs could sense the presence of the wolf.
Yeah, yeah. Now I can tell you a little story.
That
happened within my own family, which I think illustrates the point you're making there. I've got two sons, and my youngest son was about four or five, and one day one of our neighbour's little girl came to the door, and she had one of these little wobbly, plasticated snakes. You hold the tail, mm-hmm. and the front of it wobbles around.
And yeah.
When we opened the door and he was standing there and saw that, he went as white as a sheet, and he was mm-hmm. absolutely petrified by it. And mm-hmm. I thought, how could that happen? Because to my knowledge, he'd never seen a real one. So I was already with a belief in reincarnation, and I thought that must have something to do with the past life. When he was a little bit older, we went to, or I took him rather, to an exhibition of mind, body and spirit, and it was rather crowded. And when he was walking around with me, a lady came towards us, and she had a big snake round her neck, and he nearly collapsed. So I'm thinking that's got to be something to do with that fear, got to be something to do with his past life. And I was convinced in the end that he'd been had a lifetime possibly in India, because what he used to do when he also was very young, he used to sit in the lotus position. I mean, nobody showed him or told him how to do it. So I think if you're observant like that, you can probably see these things sometimes in your own children as they grow up.
Definitely. Yes, definitely.
Well, you've spoken of your daughter. I mean, you were watching things there and you had difficulty, and that was related to a past life. Maybe that's a little bit different. I'm talking about something that produced fears. But have you come across that very often, where you could account for somebody's fears through an experience like that?
Yes, it can be very strange, can't it? I mean, I had one person who was terrified of buttons.
What?
Shiny buttons.
That's unbelievable.
Exactly. You think, why on earth would anybody be frightened? I mean, snakes and spiders, you think, okay, but buttons. And, you know, I defy anybody to explain to me how somebody could be frightened of buttons. But anyway, it turned out that this person had been a Native American, and the village had been attacked, and this particular, I think he was a young boy at the time, was actually pushed onto the ground and killed by a man wearing a tunic with shiny buttons.
Oh, yeah.
You know, brass buttons. Now, it wasn't actually the buttons that he was scared of. It was that the buttons put him in that state of fear that he felt when he was being killed. Another, and it made perfect sense then, of course. And then there was another one that was terrified of birds, especially seagulls. And he turned out to belong to a tribe in this country that used to climb the cliffs to get the seagull's eggs to eat. And, of course, one day he was climbing the cliff and he thought that there wasn't a bird in the nest, and there was, and the bird flew at his face. And he fell off the cliff. And so, you know, after that, back in this lifetime, he was petrified of birds. I've had people who are petrified of cats, and they've turned out to be somebody who was executed in ancient Egypt because they accidentally killed a cat, which, of course, was sacred at the time.
Yes.
So, yes, definitely. Definitely phobias. I mean, obviously, if there's something in this lifetime, like a child that went under the water in the pool or and then is frightened of water, that's different because it's explainable. But when there isn't an explanation for it, or it's something totally bizarre that people are frightened of, then, you know, definitely have a look and see, because it, you know, it changes people's lives. And there was another lady that was petrified of statues. Yeah, I mean, it was ruining her life. I mean, at school, children figured it out, so if they went to a church or something, they'd try and push her into the statues because she was frightened of them. And she went to a cathedral with her husband and nearly passed out because there was this huge statue of a horse. And eventually, you know, she just couldn't stand it any longer. She was frightened to go anywhere in case there's a statue there. And it turned out that she had had a life in Roman times where she'd worked for some rich people, and she had to take a baby to work with her. And there'd been some kind of earthquake, and this huge statue had fallen on her, knocked the baby from her arms and crushed it.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, she was still grieving for this yeah. baby. And since then, you know, she's been able to go anywhere, and she's not in the slightest bit frightened of statues anymore,
yeah.
which is great.
That is the answer, isn't it? Once people can account for their fear, they can really put it to bed, can't they, and maybe move on from that point.
Yeah, because they can rationalise it then, can't they? They yeah. can say, oh, well, okay, that statue hurt me, but these, we don't have earthquakes here, so, you know, the statues are not going to fall on me, so I don't have yeah. to be scared anymore.
Tell me, why are so many women frightened of spiders and mice? What have they brought with them?
I don't know, you have to wonder. I mean, I kind of don't mind some spiders. I think a lot of that, you know, is inherited fear, because once upon a time, I'm sure we've all lived in some country where spiders were poisonous. I don't know, it's not, I mean, with me, it's not really that I think the spider's going to hurt me. I just don't like them. So I don't know, I think there's probably a race
memory. I can tell you that. Sometimes my wife will be upstairs and she might go into the bathroom and she'll shout out for me. She said, quick, quick, she said, there's a spider in the bathroom. And I go up there and it's one that's so small I have a job to find it. But it doesn't matter what size it is. If there's a spider, that's it. And if it's a big one, she's petrified.
But aren't we silly? Because you get a butterfly. You know, you get a butterfly could come and land on my hand and I'd just go, oh, look, isn't it lovely? But take the wings away and it's a spider. So why don't we mind them? Just because they're pretty?
Yeah. I think
maybe spiders were pink.
It's something to do perhaps with the country you live in or your upbringing.
Yeah.
I think if you've got, say, a parent, say your mother, who's frightened of spiders, you take that on. You don't know why, but then you're frightened of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, we've got to get on to talk about your book, How to Be Happy.
Okay.
We haven't mentioned that, have we, really?
I've mentioned a couple of incidences out of it, but not actually specifically, no.
Right.
I mean, I wrote this one because, to me, there's two kinds of happiness. There's the happiness that you get when somebody buys you a new car, or you get a raise, or
you know
that
about
kind
that,
of happiness.
Do you?
No, not yet, but you never know.
Not yet. No.
And and then, but that kind of happiness is transitory. You know, people say, oh, I'd be happy if I had more money. I'd be happy if I had a holiday or a bigger house or a new car or something. And then they are happy for a little while, but it wears off, doesn't it? Whereas there's this other kind of happiness that is from inside you. And it's something that nobody can take away. Now, you've only got to look at, say, an African man in the bush or a woman who's marching along and they're singing. And, you know, those people are indomitable and they're smiling, you know, and they're happy and they've got nothing. Mm. And then you'll get a businessman in the city walking along with his head down, miserable as sin, with his... incredibly expensive suit and his incredibly expensive wife waiting at home, and all he does is worry about losing it all.
Yeah.
So what you want is this inner happiness, because if you have that, I mean, my life isn't perfect. You know, my husband's had cancer. We've had our problems. Thank God he's okay now. But, you know, I'm not saying your life's going to be perfect, but if you've got this inner happiness, it sustains you. Because it's always going to be there. It might get squashed sometimes, but it's there. And at the slightest thing, it will blossom. So how do you get that sort of happiness? Well, we're back to what you said, that everybody has a purpose.
Yeah.
If you understand your purpose, or even if you don't know what it is, but you're fulfilling it, that is where happiness comes from.
I agree.
We have all got this inherent happiness we'll get if we're fulfilling what we came here to do. And like I said, it can be a very simple thing. It can be being a mother or a father. It can be making a beautiful wildlife garden. It can be just relaxing. It can be that you've come here to recuperate and that you should be content just to do that.
Yeah.
But you feel like you've got to achieve all the time. People are pushing you to achieve all the time.
Well,
or it can be something, or it can be something amazing.
Carry on, Well, you're given the idea in life that what you try to do is to gather riches and property and money around you. And where people are successful, as you were pointing out, they don't always find happiness in that.
Nope.
So in spite of achieving a certain level of success in that part of their life, they still feel something gnawing at them inside because they aren't really fulfilling totally what they came to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's perfectly true. You can't take it with you. At one point, there's going to come a moment in your life when all of that is going to mean nothing.
Yes, yes. Mind you, you could bury it somewhere and come back in another life.
Well, you know, they used to do that. They used to carry over debts. They used to sign a thing to say they'd pay the person back in the next lifetime.
Well,
you've only got to look
you probably have to anyway.
Yeah, nowadays,
in a different way,
But you've only got to look at celebrities, haven't you?
Yeah.
You get wonderful examples to us all, like Paul Newman, who sadly died recently.
Yeah.
And then you get, I don't know if Americans have heard of Amy Winehouse. She's a very, very big singer over here. And she's just always out of her mind on drugs and making herself ill and going into rehab.
Yeah,
and thoroughly miserable. And how many celebrities have good relationships?
Yeah.
Hardly any. They just keep swapping, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They just keep swapping partners.
It all seems to go with being in that realm, actors or whatever they are.
Mm.
They seem to have a different lifestyle, don't they?
Yeah, and I think they think that they're meant to be happy doing what they're doing because they're successful and they can't understand why they're not.
No.
So they look for other things. They perhaps, you know, look for other women or drink or drugs to try and make themselves happy. It doesn't work, of course.
A lot of their world is very unreal, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They don't live in the real world at all, do they?
No. Yes, indeed. What do you think about the possibility that people have had lives off this planet? Have you ever come across anybody who alleges to come from somewhere else?
I haven't actually, although I have heard of it. I haven't personally come across anybody who has, but I don't see why not.
No.
I mean, scientists now are agreeing, aren't they? Physicists are saying that there are many, many universes, and depending on which theory you subscribe to, those universes could be a hair's breadth away. So, you know, maybe, I don't know about other planets, might be a bit difficult to imagine, but I think I can imagine people having lives in other dimensions.
Yeah. Well, I've heard people where people have been regressed and they speak in those terms. So somebody comes through and they're describing a life off the world. So I just wondered whether you too had experienced that at all.
No, I haven't. It's very interesting, though, and I'm open-minded to it. I did have one lady that quite surprised me because I had thought that we progressed up the animal chain. And that's not to say we're better than animals. I don't think we are in a lot of instances. But I think the human condition is the hardest one to remain spiritual in. And so it's the hardest challenge. And so I sort of felt we worked our way up to that. But a friend of mine who's an animal communicator, in fact, I believe you're going to have her on your show in a while, Madeline Walker. You need to talk to her about it. She's actually had animals that have been humans. She has actually communicated with animals that have been humans before they were animals, which kind of surprised me. And I have had one lady who regressed back to being a lion.
Wow.
So that was quite interesting as well.
Yes, I always found that idea a bit strange, but I've come to accept that if something in your experience requires that you do that, then it is open to you. I don't think it's the normal progression, but I may be wrong.
No, I feel the same, yes.
Yeah. Your
yes,
lady,
I feel the same, that it's fairly exceptional.
I've got Madeline coming in on the 14th of November, so she's not too many weeks away. I've been reading books where they talk about people's experience as animals, and it seemed to me they're very much one-off things for specific reasons that they want to experience. That's the point.
Yes. Or perhaps they want to come back and be with somebody for a shorter period of time and, you know, have some kind of relationship that's different from the human relationship in order for that person to learn something.
Yes.
That's another possibility.
What do you think about ghosts, which appear to be beings from the past? Do you think they're real?
I do. I think there's lots of different kinds of ghosts. I think there are ghosts that are sort of recordings that have been absorbed into stone, you know, so you just get a repetitive action going on over and over again, like a flickering television image. I think that's just, there's nobody there, it's just something that's been recorded.
Some energy there,
yes.
Yeah.
I think you probably do get some people that haven't left this plane and need to, for whatever reason they've stayed behind. But I also think that sometimes ghosts are us. I think that sometimes, like in my case, when I went back to the house that I'd lived in as Madeline, that house was known to be haunted. And I think it was haunted by a part of me that I left behind.
Good point,
I think that sometimes when you go back to a place where you've left a part of yourself, you can actually sort of pick it up. Because there's no doubt that I changed enormously after I went there. I became a much stronger person. It was as if I left my courage there, or my assertiveness there.
Oh.
And once I'd got that back, people were quite amazed. Like, for instance, flying to America on 3 planes in one day. You know, when all my life, anybody that knew me would have bet you thousands and thousands of dollars that you'd never get me on a plane ever.
Yeah.
And yet...
Did you ever find out why you had that fear? That would be something you could be regressed on.
No, I did have another rather horrible nightmare for some years where I was in a plane... And the plane actually started to collapse in on itself.
Oh, yeah.
It actually broke up in the air and all the partitions. So I've got a feeling that there is one there, that's happened in. I mean, when I was a child, I was terrified, well, in fact, I still am a bit terrified of airships.
Oh.
And, a lot of people said, well, you must have watched the film of the Hindenburg. Disaster, but it wasn't that because it. I'm the same with hot air balloons.
Yes,
I have to stand. I can't have a hot air balloon go over the top of my head. I have to stand under a tree or inside a house.
Yes,
I don't
weird.
Like to have them.
Yeah. So the inference there is that you may have been in one in the early part of the last century. Which did implode, and that's it. You could have been a passenger or one of the crew.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely wasn't flying it. I definitely was a passenger.
Yeah, I definitely
was a passenger. And it was, you know how the early planes, the partitions were sort of covered in plastic? They weren't, like, made of plastic like they are now. They were actually sort of covered in a loose plastic covering.
Very thin.
Because I can remember that.
Yes.
I can remember, the seams and them all bulging in and breaking. But It's not actually the flying I'm afraid of. It's the falling. That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm one of these people that even now when I fly, I can't sleep or anything or even relax, because if I do, it'll fall out of the sky. I'm holding it up there by sheer willpower.
Yeah.
In fact,
Jenny,
I've got quite... Yes.
We're getting on so well here and chatting away, which is wonderful. In 5 minutes' time, I have to conclude the program. And I
want
to give you time to tell people a little bit about perhaps some of your other books and let them know your website or how they can obtain them. So just help yourself
okay,
for a few minutes to tell people what all about that.
All right, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say how incredibly lucky I've been, and how anybody that out there that's got a book in them should never give up, because it took me a long, long time to find a publisher, and that was a very, very small publisher. And my publisher for the last 4 years or so has been O Books, who are absolutely wonderful.
I've heard
and,
of them, yes.
Right, and but they still are... In the mind-body-spirit field, they're quite a fledgling publisher. And obviously, anybody who's written books always wants to get the biggest publisher they can, so that as many people as possible can read what they have to say. So with O Books, I did Past Life Angels and then Souls Don't Lie. And then I did my first fiction for them, which again has a reincarnation theme, and it's called The Tree That Talked, which came out last year. And
that's based on truth.
No, that isn't a fictional story. It's the only one I've ever done.
Oh right, okay, yeah.
And it's about the 300 years during the lifetime of an oak tree,
and everything
that happened around that oak tree. It also dips into the realms of animism, where you know, the spirit of a person can pass into a tree or a river.
Yeah.
In other words, that everything on the planet is connected.
Yeah.
It also involves a 300-year-old murder mystery, and it has also got a reincarnation theme to it.
Wow. Yeah.
People seem to like that. And then came my first children's book that I wrote with my husband, called Night of the Unicorn, which is it's a trilogy. The first one teaches children about love and the power of magic, the power of love.
Mm-hmm.
And we go on to teaching them about the power of the universe in the second book, and then the communal soul in the third book, all written in a fantasy about a magic world and unicorns and...
Lovely, yes. Yeah.
And so on like that. And then came my current book, How to Be Happy, which came out this week.
Yeah.
And then in March next year, I've got Forever Faithful, which is the story of my dog, which we haven't had time to go into today, but my dog not only is reincarnated, but she brought through physical proof that she was reincarnated.
Oh, right.
So that's her story.
Very interesting one. Right, we've got only a short time left now. I know you've got a very simple website address, but perhaps you'd like to tell our listeners where they can find out about these books, and presumably they can order them from your site as well. Is that correct?
Yes, they can do that. Yes, definitely.
Right, give us the address.
My website is just www.jennysmedley.com.
Right, and Smedley is spelled?
Smedley.
And we'll take it for granted that Jenny is Jennemy. Not to
right,
worry anyway, because when I do the archive for the programme, I will put the website address in there for anybody who reads it.
And I'd love to hear from people. People can email me on the website. I'd love to hear from any of your listeners. That'd be great.
Okay. Well, I'll put your email address in as well when I do the archive then.
All right, lovely, thank you.
Well, give us the email address quickly now, then, in case somebody wants to jot it down.
Okay, the email address is author, that's AUTHOR,
yes,
at all one word, globalnet,
yes,
.co.uk.
That sounds pretty straightforward. Right, so that's author, at globalnet.co.uk.
That's it.
That's great. I have to say thank you very much for coming on the programme. I think you've got a lot more you could talk about, so I'm booked up well in advance, but I think we'd have to invite you back sometime. It's been
pretty
interesting, and I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed it. So thank you again for coming onto the programme. I will now announce for our listeners my guest for next week, who is a lady called Veronica LeBarry. She describes herself as a mystic, prophet, visionary, spiritual teacher and writer, and she runs a non-profit organisation called LeBarry Retreats, and it's a teaching education for spiritual living. She's quite a clever lady. She's also written some books, got a CD out, and she's now writing another book, so that should be very interesting. Thank you for being with me today. I hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all.